We're going to go ahead and get started here. Welcome to our presentation this morning, entitled Investigating Teaching and Learning in Technology-Infused Tiled Classrooms at the University of Iowa. My name is Sam Van Horn. I'm Assessment Coordinator at ITS Instructional Services. This is my colleague, Cecilia Murniati, who is a Student Instructional Technology Assistant and my co-researcher. We'd also like to recognize a contributor to our project, Kem Saichai, who formerly worked with us and is now at the Office of Information Technology at the University of Minnesota. We just like to state out front that we welcome your questions during the presentation. You may use the Twitter hashtag for our session, ELI12 with the underscore SESS14. You may also email questions that might be longer to Cecilia. She'll be checking your email and both of those throughout the session. And those of you also in the audience may send us questions that way. We would like to be able to address your questions at some point during the presentation or address them afterwards if we don't have time today. We'd like to begin, before we talk about why we undertook our assessment project, we thought it'd be important to talk about what the tile classrooms are. These are the three tile classrooms that were online during our assessment research. An 81-seat classroom at the top right, a 54-seat in the lower left, and a 27-seat in the lower right. Although these classrooms have different sizes, they share a common layout. They include round tables that seat 9 students each. Each table has 3 laptops that are hooked up to a dedicated wall-mounted monitor that can be used to share work with students among students at that table, or indeed at any of the displays around the room. You can see, perhaps in the top right image, the instructor station is in the middle of the tiled classroom, which makes it easier for the instructor to move around the classroom, especially doing group projects. The underlying philosophy behind this room is that it's an optimal environment to facilitate technology-mediated collaborative learning. And TILE, by the way, stands for Transform, Interact, Learn, and Engage, and that's one of our logos there in the upper left. Just a brief background about the TILE classrooms. They're based in part on the scale-up model developed by physics educators at North Carolina State University to augment the teaching of undergraduate physics courses. At the University of Iowa, the TILE classrooms are administered as a collaboration between Information Technology Services and the Center for Teaching. So there are different partners that have different roles in administering these learning environments. Faculty receive training before they're allowed to teach in these classrooms in what's called the TILE Institute, which is a several-day workshop which has been, in the past, facilitated by people involved with the scale-up project. They learn about designing learning activities for the room. They also learn about how to use the basic technology, the interface, at the instructor station. And they actually design learning activities that they test out on each other during the workshop. So the idea is that we want faculty members to recognize the potential of these rooms and to design their instruction in an appropriate way for these learning environments. Whereas previous iterations of classrooms similar to these, such as at the teal classrooms at MIT and the scale-up project in North Carolina State, have focused on the STEM disciplines almost exclusively, at our institution, this is an initiative that cuts across disciplines. We have about 60 faculty members that have undergone training so far from 7 colleges across campus and different departments, 30 different departments as well. Now I'm just going to play a brief excerpt about what learning in the tile classroom looks like with the environment there. It can look like a kind of a hectic situation. So we have just a short 2-minute clip here to play for you.
The tile rooms are rich in IT resources. The instructor can project material from the central podium to many screens around the room. And student tables feature multiple laptop computers. The instructor can also showcase student work by projecting individual laptop screens around the room.
Having the computers available for the students at the tables and then being able to project some of the images that we were looking at onto the screens was really an important part of the day-to-day study that we were doing.
You don't feel condemned to a desk. We have the round tables so everybody's able to participate. We have the laptops so we're able to look up the iKind account and also respond faster. I feel like we're in the now.
While technology is a tremendous asset, many students and faculty have found that other elements of the tile spaces have an even greater impact.
On the first day of class, they walked in. They were a little bit thrown off by the different setup. But once they got comfortable with the new environment, they really opened up into a level of discussion and conversation and work that exceeded my expectations and really exceeded what I normally see in the classroom dynamic. So it really facilitated a cooperative effort that's hard to do when you have to reconfigure the space in a normal style classroom.
Oh, the group work is so much better. Personally, on a personal level, I feel like I can contribute and feel like I'm being heard.
Instead of having a big lecture hall and having 500 people and a sea of faces that you don't know, you come and sit with the same people every day and you get to know them really well, and it helps a lot with learning the information.
So Cecilia will talk about the student instructional technology assistants that are a critical part of the training program for faculty that go into the Tile classrooms.
Sam mentioned earlier that I'm a CETA. So what is a CETA? CETA is Student Instructional Technology Assistant, and it is a program under Instructional Services at the University of Iowa. It consists of students who provide technology-related support for any instructors in the form of one-on-one consulting, in-class training, tile room tour, or technology-related project support. In relation to tile, CETA provides support in numerous ways. Here in the slide, you can see the blue boxes there show the overall time for tile. And the orange boxes show what CETA provides for the tile instructors. As you see here, the first is the Pre-Tile Institute. It refers to a time where Center for Teaching and Instructional Services open application for any instructors who want to use Tile Classroom for their courses. And after that, they're going to have the Tile Institute, which is a three-day workshop. And in that workshop, they learn about the pedagogy of the tile, collaborative learning. And then they also have the opportunity to practice using the equipment for collaboration and sharing. And what CETA does in this step is to meet with the tile instructors to explore possible use of equipment or learning tools, such as clickers, or wikis, or blogs. And then right before the beginning of the semester, 1 week before the semester begins, CETAs meet again with the tile instructors to provide a guidance to use the equipment in the room, to test clickers, to see their wiki space, and then to test the equipment again for collaboration and sharing. And usually, in the first 3 weeks of the class, CETAs, upon request, sit with the professor in the class so that professors are comfortable using the equipment. And then at the end of the semester, CETAs meet again with the tile instructors to review the projects that they have done. They review the clickers or the wikis or blogs so that they can improve what they have done in the room for next semester.
Thank you. So when embarking on an assessment project, it's sort of a gargantuan task related to the tile classrooms. These are technology-rich learning environments with a very different type of layout for institution. There are many different stakeholders, the Center for Teaching, Instructional Services. And so what we thought, what would be the best way to judge the effectiveness of these rooms? And first off, people ask me, as assessment coordinator, what's related to retention? People always ask me this. People ask me if computer labs are related to retention. And being that this is a very young initiative at the University of Iowa, the first semester these were online was only in fall 2010, I knew that there would be no real way to judge or to look at relationships between persistence and attendance in tile classrooms as of yet. And then we looked at grades. Well, maybe student learning outcomes in terms of grades in these courses would be effective ways to look at this. And really, when we had looked at the research about similar learning environments that have come out of institutions such as the University of Minnesota, and as I mentioned, MIT and North Carolina State, they've already shown that on average, students in classrooms such as this can achieve better outcomes when compared with students in traditional learning, the similar courses in traditional learning environments. So we kind of thought that this is just a part of that people have already, a road that people have shown that these rooms have a good instructional benefit. And indeed, we did our own just a quasi-experimental study where we, from the first semester, we selected four courses that had previous, there were previous four courses taught by the same instructor in a traditional environment. And indeed, our mixed effects model showed that on average, students in the tile classrooms had higher grades. So we kind of thought, well, this is one way to go down that we don't want to spend a lot of time going. And instead, we wanted to say, well, how do these classrooms really benefit teaching and learning at the University of Iowa? And how could we perhaps look at the role and the impact of the special technology in the room, the ability to share resources across all those wall-mounted monitors for collaborative learning, the special layout that facilitates group work more easily, and then our special training program for preparing people to go in. So we wanted to say, we really wanted to do an assessment project that could benefit people at our institution, that we could take information back and say, you know, what are some changes that might improve this? At the outset, we thought that we just considered that we just have one audience, that we would gather some information, we would just have one audience that we would give a big report to. But in actuality, we really work with multiple audiences with an effort like this, being that there's so many stakeholders. We work with the classroom technology group that administers the technology in the room, installs it, looks to see ways that they can improve it. We also work with, as Cecilia described, the CEDAs and people who are involved with faculty development to ensure that they can use the room effectively. These were people that were foremost in our mind because we work with them. We see them in the hallway. We get coffee with them. People we don't necessarily get coffee with are the Office of the Provost, to the ITS leadership. But yet again, these are people that are very interested in the outcomes that related to these classrooms. So we developed three guiding research questions for our assessment project. First of all, what factors are associated with students' desire to take courses in tiled classrooms? We thought that this would be a good question for us to look at specifically because there is interest in identifying these courses up front in the course online course catalog as, you know, this course is in a tile classroom. So we wanted to say, well, what if this movement will continue and be strong, how can we show what is associated with students' desire to keep taking courses in these environments? For this, we would use a beginning of the semester survey to understand students' attitudes towards group work, towards the environment itself, and end of the semester surveys in which we ask them questions about their attitudes towards group learning in the environment and how the different types of technology, such as the laptops, the wall-mounted monitors, of their self-perceptions of how it benefited their learning. And all we would also gather academic records, such as their measures of prior learning and their outcomes within those courses, to look for relationships there. Our second question, how do instructors design learning activities for the tile classrooms, and how do students perceive the usefulness of those activities? This ended up being a very important question for us and the most time-intensive for us to research. Conducting interviews with instructors at the beginning and the end of the semester to learn about why they made design decisions, how they worked out from their perspective. We observed every course in the tile classroom for our courses, and we conducted student focus groups to learn about their attitudes towards taking classes in these environments. Our third question, are students' perceptions of their learning significant predictors of their outcomes in courses in tile classrooms? So in addition to looking at saying, well, how do they feel about the environment, can we see any relationships between these attitudinal measures and their actual learning outcomes? And not just to say, to move beyond just saying learning outcomes are better or worse in non-tile or tile classrooms. Our assessment project, IRB Proved 1, was conducted over spring 2011 and fall 2011. In spring 2011, we recruited six tile courses and one non-tile class taught by a tile instructor, and we recruited 97 students. In fall 2011, we recruited from 31 tile classes, and this gave us eight tile courses and one non-tile course with a total of 285 students enrolled in our assessment project. Although we did collect these non-tile courses for assessment project, the purpose of our presentation today is primarily to talk about what happened within the tile classrooms themselves. And this leads us to our joint activity. Being that tile is about active learning, we can't get away. It infects our presentations as well. And Cecilia is going to introduce this activity for us today.
Okay. Right now we are going to do a mini activity using the data that we gathered during our research. In the handout, you have the blue one, the blue handout. We're going to use that. And in this activity, you're going to do some collaborative learning. It means that you're going to work with your neighbors and to discuss the questions we are going to have here, answer the question that you need to answer the question that we have on the slide. And before we do that, I'm going to give you the background of the activities that we have. So these excerpts are taken from Professor Mayer's class. She's a professor in the College of Education, and she taught graduate level course for qualitative research method. And in her course, she used the biggest tile classroom that can occupy that can be occupied by 81 students, and she had only 8 students. And in her course, she used Skype to conduct long-distance interviews and Atlas DI to code qualitative data. So the excerpts here were taken from the first interview and the class observation, student focus group interview, and end of semester interview. And addition at the back, we also include a graph about students' perception of technology problems. Now you have 10 minutes to read and then discuss with your neighbors, and then we are going to have 5 minutes and ask your thoughts. You know, you can share your thoughts at the end of the activity. So you may begin. Is there any question about the activity?
We're going to come out and facilitate.
So a couple of things that we talked about was one, that it seems like that the class could have benefited from having some pre-testing prior to the session, so that a lot of these technology issues could have been encountered prior to the class ever getting into the room. But then if the technology while the class was in session wasn't working, some of the things that could have been done would be to actually change technology. So they seem to be stuck on this Skype thing, which there's so many other options for video conferencing. Then some of the other things we talked about was the teacher's frustration level seemed to impact the class in almost scolding the students about what they were doing in the classroom instead of trying to find ways to be more innovative or change. And then the final thing we talked about was that maybe this particular reason for using the room, just for convenience on the faculty members' sake, was probably not the best reason for using the room. Rather, it would have been better to find a reason for using the room that was more pedagogy-based. Does that answer your question?
I think you read our presentation.
Sorry.
Any other insights or comments looking at these
the
multiple sources?
Right.
Oh. We said about the exact same things that you did.
Okay.
So I've had a graduate level class on qualitative research before. There's no reason that groups can't learn from each other. So there's a 27 person thing, that was, so that would be a 27 person room on
there
campus.
There is a 27 seat classroom as well.
Right, so that would have been two groups of four. And one person could have been interviewing while the other three were doing observations or saying what they would have done differently or something like that. I mean, it doesn't seem like these students are doing confidential interviews if they're all doing it in a group anyway, because you could overhear what everybody else is saying. So I think there were some additional benefits of picking a smaller room more appropriate and breaking students into teams. But I also agree, it doesn't seem like they consulted with the person who set up the room to say, here's what I'm planning on doing. Is there anything that I should think about before this? Because if this was my group and somebody would have come to me with that, I would have said, okay, let's test it out. You be in your office, I'll be in the room. Let's try Skype and see what happens.
As the observer, for one of the days that this happened, it was 45 minutes before they could begin doing anything. And so, yes, I mean, that's a very good point to bring up. As a scheduling, what's interesting about the tile classrooms is that, of course, a lot of professors prefer the 27-seat room. When you can't get that room, you can get the 81-seat one, which poses a whole new set of problems being very large, and then as you'll see with the pillars in the middle. So that's just a part of a scheduling that is a real issue, and a lot of faculty want that 27-seat one.
And then with the choice of the tools that they're going to use, some professors choose to sometimes change what they decide earlier. And CIRA usually help with this learning tool and what they're going to use and test it before the classes begin. But then in the middle, it's like, you know, I'm going to choose this one instead of that one. So that's probably something, you know, that is going to work well if, you know, the instructors communicate, you know, their wishes better.
I think she has a comment. Would you like to stand up so we
sure.
can see?
One of the things that we talked about was how it would have been useful for the assessment, and perhaps that was there but just not in our excerpt here, to probe deeper into the instructor's rationale for using this particular technology and what her experience level was with the technology prior to using it, and kind of going along the first group's comment about the many different options. It could have even been audio, could have been adequate for the purpose of this. I think everybody knows how to use a telephone. But so that was just a question about the richness of the material that we had available with, did not include the instructor's reflection on why and what support there was in helping her select the appropriate technology.
We're also looking at online questions, but we will take people from here for now.
I also wondered about just the interview she had before, because it seemed that there were some red flags that maybe the consultant who works with the professors didn't pick up on. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand how there was the driving 150 more miles if they would have just done it in other parts of the same building, so that was not clear of her motivation for using the room. But then she also says that the students might have to get earbuds or something, and there's no indication here that the consultant followed up on that. So then she was surprised to arrive in the classroom and discover that equipment wasn't there. Her suggestion of a tile kit makes sense, that maybe all students who are going to have a class in that are given some sort of handout in advance of, this is what you're expected to bring. You may or may not use earbuds, headset, microphone, flash drive, or whatever.
Thank you.
Anything else from the floor, the participants?
How many of you thought that the interviews were the most illustrative or useful parts of the data that we gave to you? Hands up? Really up. helping you to understand the particular either difficulties or intrinsic issues surrounding the instructional design for this room. I'm sorry, should have posed that more. Interviews? Okay. Observations? One minority person? Would someone like to speak for the minority opinion? Why observations were the most important one? Clearly, people are very glomming onto the interviews as a rich source of information here. Oh, would someone like to talk about the observations? Cecilia, back here.
The observations would get more at the sort of the workflows that were happening in the room versus okay. something that they were able to articulate through an interview.
Okay. Any other thoughts on different parts of the data? We'll check just quickly just to make sure we don't have an online question waiting for us. We have a tweet. Is it a... From our perspective, if we just had the observations and observed tile classrooms, we recognize that without interviews, we wouldn't know about the person's thought processes that went into their design and what tools we thought were available to them. But also, if we only looked at the instructor, we wouldn't get the perspective of the students as well. So what we found is that using these multiple methods helps us to look at the tile classroom as a system, and the different parts of the system that say, well, what are things in the system that we might be able to improve based on this information that we're gathering here? Were there questions? No? No? Okay. So we'll move on. One of the, I want to just kind of turn one aspect before we move on to talking about what we found in our project, is talking about rapport. It was important that instructors and students, but most instructors got something out of working with us. Indeed, many instructors wanted to work with us because they would have Cecilia or I in the room and could answer questions that rose up. And that having that rapport is really essential, that we answered people's questions about technology. Because our research was IRB approved, meaning we wanted to not use it for a dual purpose, to help our own practice and to disseminate so that we could help people in our instructional technology community, is that it was important for us to protect their confidentiality. One reason is because some of the faculty members, our assistant, are junior faculty members, and if they have a rough experience starting in the Tile classroom and they're trying something new, we don't want this information going around that this junior person is having a difficult time. You know, we want to be able to report the principles and what we observe and keep the personalities out of it as much as possible, unless, of course, the person we're working with doesn't mind being identified. There's a lot of basic benefits that come from working with or doing assessment research. When you observe, when you sit in 20 hours of Tile classes a week, you see a lot. In the 81-seat classroom, the motion sensors weren't working on one side of the room, so when the class was sitting still, the lights go out. And the observer on the other side of the room, we would wave our arms, and the lights come back on, and it got to be sort of a routine where the lights go out, and the class turns to us, and we wave. And so people always ask me, what's your job? What do you do at assessment? And I really like to say that assessment keeps the lights on in Tile classrooms and keeps everything going. And there you are, what it looks like when very immediate product of assessment. Another thing that we noticed where we were sitting in the corner of the room, that students had propped open the emergency exit door so that they could flee through the back of the room and not walk past the instructor. Obviously, there was no alarm on the door. And so, you know, we report these issues and say, you might want to have someone check the emergency exit. It's not very emergency-ish. And so we really, there were many of these issues that when you're doing assessment, although our main purpose was to look at instructional design and learning and teaching, they're very practical things that we observe sitting in a Tile classroom. So what were our main findings? How did we put all of this together and say, and what did we learn from the multiple methods of cases like Professor Meyer that we gave to you today? And we'd like to first sort of just talk about what were examples of effective instructional design. And one of those was Professor Gallagher, who was a sociology professor, who valued her students doing the work of sociology. And what she wanted to do was she wanted her own students to be able to formulate and test hypotheses of societal issues using census data, using a web-based analysis program that would enable her students to make simple cross-tabulations to look at societal issues. So students in the Tile classroom worked in groups of three. They used the laptops. They formulate hypotheses. They test them themselves. They put their results on the wall-mounted monitors to share with students at their tables and around the room. So students on one side of the room can see what other people have found, and they're all using the same data, but they're getting multiple perspectives and seeing what other people have found with this data. Previously, this was something that Professor Gallagher could not do. Instead, in her class, what she did was sit, stand here and ask you for a hypothesis. Give me a hypothesis. And then test that hypothesis herself and say what the result was. So this really had transformed her way of being able to teach sociology. And what she found was that because she was able to make this activity one that was public and open, she was able to identify their mistakes earlier, see how they used how they made inferences and judge the data quicker and help them sooner to be better at analyzing data. Another example is Professor Simmons.
Professor Simmons is a professor in Spanish Portuguese, and she taught an undergraduate level course. And her course is a new course designed specifically for the classroom. And in the course, she wanted students to be able to analyze early text and images from colonial Spanish America. And in that class, she had her students work collaboratively in groups of three, and she had a wiki project for each group. And each group had a theme that they have to work throughout the semester. And the students really appreciated the collaborative work, and they, at the end of the course, they had a presentation, and it was beautifully conducted. The students did a very wonderful job creating the website, because Wiki is basically a mini website. And Professor Simmons said that students are able to engage with early text and images in a much more intimate way than they would have done in the ordinary classroom, because they can do research about the images. They can do the wiki project directly in the class, and it helps students to get the work done without having to meet outside of class.
We've just given you two examples of people who chose the room because it was able to facilitate new designs of teaching. But there was also a very real reason that people chose the tile classroom, mainly for the physical layout, having just a different room, and to do the same things. And Professor Zeft was an example of that. He taught a course in VBA programming, which some of you might be familiar with, which is a programming language in Excel, enabling you to automatize big functions for working with large data sets. So essentially, the course spends the time working in a code view. And everyone who comes to class has to use a laptop. And he wanted a classroom that was easier for it to move around in and easier for students to see the code that he was putting up that they were supposed to use. Here was the classroom that Professor Zeft used prior to the tile classroom. This is an auditorium classroom. He would put his code up at the front of the room on the projector screen, and he would say you basically would have to have binoculars to be able to read the code. And in addition, it was very difficult for him to walk around, to get in those aisles and be able to walk through there and help a student who had a problem with that. However, when Professor Zeft came to the tile classroom, he taught in the 81-seat classroom that I mentioned before, has two pillars in it. I should say that this was previously a library space for Department of Physics and Astronomy that was reconverted for a classroom. And so we're illustrating here, you can see that one day Professor Zeft is walking around in the class and a student has essentially come up with an answer to a problem they're working on and is displaying his code view on the wall-mounted monitor. Professor Zeft, walking around the room, stops at that monitor, points to the code and says, "Look here at this code." A student where Cecilia is sitting says, "What code?" Because of course each monitor is only displaying what's at the individual's table. So the people who can't see that monitor can't see the code. And what happened was, what we observed was that at that moment, that would have been the moment for Professor Zeft to return to the instructor station and hit the controls that can show one student's laptop around the whole room. They can all see that. But instead, what happened was Professor Zeft flustered a little bit, went to a whiteboard and tried to write the code out for people to see. So this was an example where what we think the room can really do, it can really facilitate collaboration on a new level, where this was just something that he wasn't able to do at that moment, where it really would have benefited the students. And Professor Zeft saw it, though, as a problem, as a flaw with the design of the room. So he said specifically that those pillars are the problem. The pillars make it hard for people to see what people's doing. Whereas another way to look at that would be if only he could just be maybe a bit more automatic with the controls to use there. We have big, rich lessons from that experience, is that we need to be able to ensure that faculty can operate those controls so that they can really support collaborative learning at those moments. It's very difficult, we recognize, when they're walking around and they're engaging in a problem that they have to walk back there and it's often we see that it's easier just to go back to those old strategies, write it down for someone to see. Is there a question? So the question, in case the online people can't hear it, was that is there a way to give them a hand control? And there's actually two new tile classrooms that recently came online, and they are investigating having an interface that's near the table that enables the students to show that, but it still wouldn't allow the instructor to show that around the room. So that's still an idea that's wondering how do we better facilitate that. We'd like to talk about how our survey measures support the ideas that we found that it's important to have effective instructional design as well as being able to use the tools effectively to support collaborative learning. One of our preliminary findings, and one that we mentioned in our abstract, was that when we look at our main outcome variable as a student's desire to take courses in a tile classroom, we see that there's an inverse relationship with that and the student's ACT score. It was a strong relationship, and we believed it had implications for retention at our institution, that perhaps students who come in at more at risk for not persisting, these may be special environments. And our observation and our interviews supported that finding because professors told us that students who really needed more help benefited from project-based learning where they could get multiple perspectives. However, I do need to say that when we got our data a few weeks before we planned our presentation, that finding washed out of our model. We do see negative correlations between a student's ACT score and their desire to take a class in the tile classroom, but it's no longer a significant predictor in a regression model that we're illustrating here. So this may be something that we just need to still attend to. That negative correlation is still interesting to us. The series of graphs I'm going to show you are developed from our prediction models, again, with that outcome variable as a student's desire to take courses in the tile classroom. We set the individual predictors to their means so that we can look and analyze at the effect of one. And this would be, this graph illustrates that as students perceive the fit of the class material was appropriate for the tile classroom environment, the more, on average, they tended to want to take courses in this tile classroom. So this supports, again, that idea that Professor Gallagher and Simmons illustrated, having that design that was really suited to that special environment there. Other factors in our model are illustrated in these three graphs. In the upper left, we see that as students, the more that they perceive that group activities were useful to their learning, the more interested they were in taking tile courses. We also see that the round tables and an interaction between round tables and laptops, again, as the perceptions of their usefulness increase, on average, they see that this room has value and that they want to take courses in this room. So these findings really support for us that these rooms are really a special tool. And how people use this tool is really critical. And it's critical for what we do. Make sure I'm on the right slide. In addition, one of our final models, when we looked at what are the predictors, what are associated with the final grades in the course, and indeed, the more that students believe that group activities were useful to their learning, we actually do see a relationship between that and their outcomes in terms of grades. Again, supporting that idea that we really need to ensure that professors can use the tile classrooms effectively, and group activities they can manage effectively because they were not without difficulties. We found that in our focus groups that students believed that the group activities were the best for them when they really needed the group to do it, as opposed to group activity for group's sake. And Cecilia's going to talk more about the implications for the way that we support faculty. Oh, there's a question, I'm sorry. So yes, in the sense that our implication is one of the ones is that we talk about is that idea that what are they trying to do? And how can we work with what they're trying to do? In this case, someone had an idea, but the idea was kept to herself. I think our slide is going to talk about that. So we have tried to look at that in an observation way. We haven't looked at it on this. We don't have enough data. We didn't look at it specifically to say what was the problem with Skype in our surveys. Those surveys are administered across all courses, so we only get general data about fit. I'm not sure if I answered your question. Did I answer you? I think we have tried to look at the fit of the material in a way.
Do you have a question?
All right, I'm going to talk about the implications. Earlier in the slides, I talk about the overall time for tile and also the support that we provide. And so basically, this is the same as the earlier slide. But then the next one there, we noticed, based on our observation, we found that instructors begin to use the extensively their learning tools and the equipment. And those states, CEDAs were already gone, and then professors, many professors forget how to use the tools and integrate that with the learning, the collaborative learning in the classroom. And as Sam mentioned earlier, we conducted this research for our audience. We want the audience to be able to use the findings to make decisions to improve students' learning outcome and student learning engagement at our institutions. And based on our findings, we conclude that at least there are two kinds of support that instructors have to have. The first support here, the first support related to instructional design is crucial because students are enthusiastic about the classroom if they see that the course materials are a good fit with the environment. And also, the students value group work better if they see that the group work is designed with a purpose, like solving a problem, or working on a wiki project, or working on a video project with groups. And in this support, it can be done in terms of like short mini workshops that helps instructors to plan their instruction effectively. So this support is intended to help instructors plan the syllabus accordingly, according to the classroom. And the second support there, related to the use of tools for collaboration and sharing, is crucial because we found that the collaborative work will work better if the students and the professors are able to use the equipment. It's not only professors, but also the students, because sometimes the professors do not give students authority to share what they have. Because the students, you know, they can select a button to share their laptops to the classroom, but usually the professors has the authority to do that. So at least if we have those kinds of support, you know, the students and the instructors will gain more benefit from the tile classroom.
Thank you. Oh, yes. So the question was, do we do an orientation for
the
students in the tile classroom?
Yes, in the beginning of the semester, CEDAs, when CEDA are in the class, the professors and CEDA explain about the room and the collaborative learning and what the students can do. But then after several weeks, it seems like they need to have some kind of repetition. During the first 3 weeks or 4 weeks, they're not, you know, some professors do not do a lot of collaborative activity. Then around the fifth week or sixth week, they begin to use more collaborative learning, more activities. But then, you know, we see then that's the weakness.
Yeah, we do. Thank you. We do have some questions on Twitter, and we just have a couple of slides, and then we're getting into the questions. So we'll just push through to. So we've given you implications that we think are important for our organization, but a key part of assessment is that it doesn't end there. You know, is that we work with stakeholders that are involved in this project. And one of the things that I've learned is that hallway meetings are as important as my reports. The length of my reports is inversely proportional to the amount of time I've been assessment coordinator in instructional services. I found that hallway meetings where when I talk to the people who work for the people that I give reports to is very helpful for disseminating these ideas. Well, then when I go to meetings and I hear it from the people that they work with, is that we work with, so, you know, discussing our results with as many people as we can in hallways has been very important to us. And already there's efforts to move forward with an e-text to help instructors plan their tile instruction more effectively. More attention to how they use that technology in the room and what tools are provided in the room. And again, we think that assessment, again, is always going to be focused on what can we do things better. And new questions may emerge related to, you know, do faculty, if we increase this amount of training and support that we give, which is intensive and takes resources, can we see a benefit to that in faculty and student experiences in the tile classroom? And what are the conditions that continue to maximize group activities or the effect of group activities in this environment? So we think that our project is not over, but that we would get more questions to continue. And with that, we're willing to take questions. Well, there were a couple of questions on Twitter. Just can you read the question and then?
Yes, one question. How does good instructional design anticipate the frequency of technology problems cited in the end of the semester survey? How does good instructional design?
I should say that for all those models that I put up their graphs, I have tables with parameter estimates. If you want to see them, when I showed them at the practice session, everybody fell asleep immediately. So, but I have them to show them to you if you had trouble sleeping. The answer to that one is that we didn't, we see that, so Professor Zeff's classroom was the one with the lowest enthusiasm about returning to the tile classroom in the last semester. And we think that that's related to the fact that the activities were the same as before, but just in a new environment. So for that, for their perspective, they may not have seen the value. So that's a one answer to that question. We have some questions.
I'm sorry if you already mentioned this, but was the training with the technology and the instructional design support a required part of the faculty using these rooms?
It is. The idea, this is a very important part of our initiative. There are other institutions we know where these are more general assignment classrooms that people can use, but for us, we see these rooms as critical tools, and we want people to use the tool well. So it is required.
I've got a question on just your configuration. When I've broken students in classes down to small groups, I never break them down to a small group of nine. I mean, nine as compared to four? In fact, I've seen in my classes small groups of six being four workers and two people who hang on. So I really usually don't go above groups of four or five. So why nine?
They don't. No, the tables are situated in nine, but groups of three are the predominant. And our training from people that have come from Scale Up have a three-person model that they use, skeptic, recorder, manager. So they sit and they share amongst those groups, but the group work is usually between two and four.
So why not tables for four?
Well, that's a really good question. The model that we took was from the scale-up model from North Carolina State. And so it was sort of a model that we took, and we administer it differently. Already there is some movement on the campus. Their Department of Physics and Astronomy is creating labs based on tile classrooms with three-person tables. So there are people that are seeing this that are making adaptations, but we essentially we're using that model.
Yes. So I wonder, have you done any assessment of the Tile Institute itself as far as the training process?
We did. We have done, although not represented in the data that we gave you, through our interviews, we asked them questions about how did this help you to do this. We have given satisfaction surveys, which have come back highly satisfactory, but our interviews have helped us to learn some perspectives of instructors who believe that they want more attention to their discipline. So being administered from a physics background, a group that was physics, people from the humanities that sometimes value a more course centered on interpretation, thought that the Tile Institute could benefit from being more attentive to how learning happens in discipline. So that's something that we're actually working on now, is saying, how can we actually respect the fact that we have so many disciplines here and make the training better? So we have an assessment of that has come out of this project. Do you want to come back and look at Twitter, too?
I just want to follow up to the question about the table sizes.
Sure.
One of the things I think Bob at North Carolina State talks about, too, is they've actually studied the size of the table impacts how the students can interact. And if you get a bigger table, the arc is flatter, so it's harder for those three people to interact. If the table is smaller, you're sitting across from each other. So actually, table size starts making a difference in terms of how well you can collaborate with people to your left and your right.
Thank you. When he says, he's referring to Bob Buechner, who's lead author on at least one paper that is, we have listed in your references, and studying actually that the number of groups was specifically chosen, or the number of people that put in groups are specifically chosen. We have a question from the audience.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of having technology tethered to specific classrooms versus pushing them out on campus?
Tethered. Well, maybe I should say I don't know. I guess with assessment, we're working in a model that is still a classroom-centered model. The people that we work with support technology in classrooms. So we have to work with what we're given. I'm sure that if there were some initiative that were non-classroom-based, we might investigate that. But right now, because it's a classroom-centered technology, that's our main emphasis. I still think we have a few minutes. If we have questions, we do. Do you have the microphone? Do you need a microphone? Steve has the microphone. Thank you, Steve. He's our official convener.
I have more of a comment, and maybe you might not have touched on this, and you might be already collecting this information, but information regarding which students might be repeat attenders of tile classes?
We have, actually. We have a small cohort that we've looked at specifically. I've looked at the data. What I have found so thus far is that their enthusiasm about the tile environment is statistically significantly greater than normal students or students that it's their first time. So we are seeing that, but it's such a small sample. It's something that I want to look at more, but we haven't, besides that, we haven't looked at that in depth yet. I think there was a couple more. Someone, Steve, up here, up in the jacket.
In developing our own assessment plans for learning spaces like this at Penn State or any other institution, I'm just wondering how much you value place on observations versus the surveys. I mean, should we be focusing a lot of time on developing models for analyzing observations? Or?
So here's the funny thing. Everyone loved the ethnographic methods the most. If I look at interviews and observations, and my colleagues, I can give them bar charts and, like I said, they tip over in front of me. But these rich descriptions of learning activities have the most weight. I think because for that fact that the Tile Institute has thought that people leaving that, they know how to use all these tools and they can do them and they don't have the professor's experience. But those descriptions of that experience are the most illustrative. Now the problem with that is that that emerged, right? So we didn't know that would happen. So we place a lot of weight because the interviews tell us their thought process for the design that we might intervene on. The surveys help us see, okay, the students, what's happening with the students, their attitudes match what we're seeing in terms of the design. If there wasn't much attention paid, we see their scores lower. But from an assessment coordinator perspective, I never have someone come up to me and say, wow, that graph from 3 weeks ago, awesome graph. They always say to me, you know, that story, we talked about it in my meeting, we talked about it here. So does that answer your question? So those have a big effect on my campus.
Sure. I can add a little bit. I think the observations provide a rich description, how the attitudes in the classroom, and sometimes you cannot see that based on the interviews. The student will say, like, yeah, I don't like it, but then there's only, you know, one or two students. But, you know, based on our observation, we can see, you know, the atmosphere in the room, what the students feel, and it really is a good additional data that we can collect.
I think we have time for one more question. I think it's 11, I think it's 12:30.
I just had a question about so to that point about observation, do you have a set list of things, checklist, rubric, et cetera, and then you add the description, and would you be willing to share it?
Yes. Stick around and we'll share that with you. We do. We have a observation protocol that, since several of us were doing it, it ensures that we look at the same thing. So, I guess I don't need two. So we do have that and we will share it with you. And we will see if we can post it to the resources as well. Thank you very much. You've been a great audience and online too. Thank you.